You're listening to the official EFL podcast.
Hello again and welcome to another edition of the official EFL podcast and a continuation of our interview with former West Brom and Wigan Athletic striker Nathan Ellington. Last week we ended the show on Nathan's rise up to the Premier League. This week it gets a little bit deeper into some of the more difficult times in Nathan's career. The managers, you know, that didn't fancy him in his second part of the career. He goes into that quite in depth in this part of the podcast. He also talks about his time that he actually spent in Greece away in a loan move. And he also goes into the importance of his faith and how he dealt with that and the struggles around, you know, being a Muslim footballer during his playing career. But I started by asking him what it was like to adjust to the Premier League and the quality of the Premier League in that season with West Brom when he made that move from Wigan.
To be honest, I felt like, you know, for the years before, we played Premiership opposition quite a few times in the Cup and we always did well and I always scored and done well. So playing, I was top scorer for West Brom at the time, with 8 goals that season, 5 in the league and 3 in the cup. But I didn't end up playing much because we had 8 strikers and they chose to play these other players, and you know, at the time. But I felt like I did really well when I played. I played well. I was very dangerous. Every game that I've got on recording, I've always watched it and watched back and seen that I did well. It was just unfortunate. I didn't, you know, we got relegated at the time. You know, I had a conversation with them saying, like, I didn't understand why I was top scorer, but I was played, you know, less than maybe half the time of other strikers. I didn't understand. I felt like they bought me at the time to just cripple Wigan rather than to play me after the, you know, after the season finished. I thought this must be the reason why they bought me at the time. But you know, the teams did want me to come back in the Premiership, but it never worked out because they didn't allow it to happen at the time. And then other players got bought, so I couldn't get brought back then. There was at least 4 occasions when I could have, well, I think it was 3 occasions where I could have gone back to the Premiership. Just things didn't allow it to happen. Things didn't work out that way. But I felt I'd done I'd done myself justice in the Premiership. I definitely did.
But Wigan apparently were one of those teams that did come back in for you as well. Close did that, you know, that move come to happening?
Very, very close. It was a whisker away, basically. You know, at the start of that when the transfer, you know, window opened, I think it was Christmas time, like January 1st till the end of January. So what happened was Paul Jewell rang me up, said he was going to, you know, put a bid in, $3 million again for what they bought me for. And the chairman actually at West Brom said he was going to let me go, but he's not going to let me go so quickly. So he's going to be probably at the end of the month, try and pull it out for as long as they can to get as much as they can for me. And so I let Paul Jewell know that. And then what happened was about 15 days went by. And he rang me up and said, listen, Nath, I'm not going to be able to wait for you just in case it doesn't happen. I can't afford to risk it. So I was like, listen, he is going to let me go. He is, just, you know, I couldn't say much. I just said he is going to let me go. But okay, no problem. I went in every day shouting, basically banging down the door every day saying, listen, let me go. Let me go. Come on. Just let me go. About 3 days before the end, the deadline day, he, as I walked in, he's like, you can go. So I couldn't get my phone out quick enough. Opened the phone, rang him and said, listen, I can come. And he said, sorry, Nath, we've gone in for Julius Agahawa. And we're just waiting on his work permit. But if his work permit doesn't come through, we'll come and get you. So I was just sitting on Sky Sports News all day that day. And obviously the inevitable happened. It came up on the screen in yellow writing. Wigan by Julius Agahawa. So that was gone. It was something which was, you know, it was so close to happening. I'm there thinking I'm going back to the club that I was played at, back to the Premiership. And it's just taken away in a second. So so close, but yet so far.
So you suffered the, you know, the agony and the ecstasy of deadline day, I suppose.
Yeah, it was the worst feeling ever. Worst feeling ever. It was a nightmare.
And of course, you carried on to play for West Brom. You featured in that playoff campaign off the bench.
Yep.
How frustrating was that for you at the time, not having, you know, a big enough saying in that playoff final against Derby? You know, frustrating match to watch, I suppose, as well, that game.
Yeah, it's very frustrating, especially because, you know, we'd done so well that whole season, even, you know, and new manager came in, Nigel Pearson took over, he did really well, and then Tony Mowbray came in and he did even better. So he was playing some amazing football. He was, you know, one of the best teams in the league. And I had a good season, to be fair. I scored like, I think it was 18 goals that season. And like 11 assists or something like that. It wasn't enough for me to be a starter. But one thing I did know is we had amazing strikers. We had Kamara up front with Phillips. So they were banging goals for fun. And then we get to the finals and everyone's just not on their game. And then he left it too late to make any changes. And, you know, everybody was just not on their game. It was so weird that we played so badly on the day. Because, again, it was within a whisker of going back to the Premiership. And then it's taken away. Another nightmare day.
Was your time at West Brom a frustrating one for you personally? I know you had some relative success in terms of your personal goal-scoring records. But in terms of, you know, you're trying to get a move away from the club, you took part in, you know, in a season where they were relegated from the Premier League. You know, you got your dream of playing in the Premier League, but it was taken away from you quite quickly. How would you sum up the experience of West Brom itself and playing for the club?
It's a bit of a mixed one, really, because, like I said, I felt we did well at the times when I played. I felt I did well as well, but at the time, I was frustrated because I didn't play as much as I should have. I felt I should have, especially if you're a top scorer, you expect, you know, like you're doing really well as well. Not like build-up play was bad. Build-up play was really good. Everything was good. I didn't get to play as much as I'd have liked. And then to get told nobody's moving the next season, that was another frustrating thing because, you know, it's another year of knowing that you're not going anywhere, even though clubs are in for you. Even at that time, Watford were in for me. And that's when Watford went up to the Premiership that time. So AD Bruford was interested, but they were saying, nope, not interested in letting any of our players go because we want to go back to the Premiership the following season. So it was a time of major frustration as well as a bit of obviously loving the experience because you're in the Premiership as well. So it's just very mixed feelings. And that's why, I, to be honest, a lot of supporters at West Brom, they still obviously see me as a good player. Even the chairman, he says, you know, at the time I was leaving, he's like, our best striker is leaving, you know. So he looked at me as the best striker, but I never played enough. So it was weird. It was a bit of a weird one.
You eventually, you know, did leave to Watford, though. Who made you, you know, their record signing as well. Was that quite a lot of pressure for you then to deliver for Watford?
No, I didn't even think of the price, to be honest. I have no, that's got nothing to do with me.
Is that part of the nature of being a striker, do you think?
To be honest, it's got nothing to do with me. I don't receive any of that money. The clubs, they you know, they do the payment between each other and then the player moves. I moved there and I was just obviously told that I'd be playing. I told, you know, I was obviously given everything, told everything about what was going to happen, how it's going to be. And it didn't really turn out to be how I was told it was going to be. So it ended up being a very frustrating time because, you know, going from a team like Wigan that played great football, you know, expansive, counter-attacking, and we was able to play anyway, to be honest, but we had a lot of quality doing a lot of things. And then going to West Brom, where obviously not as fast-paced, but had some quality, a lot of quality there. Then we went to Watford,
and what he wanted us to do at the time at Eddie Bruford, it was very Route One-ish. He just wanted to play the most Route One I've ever seen in my life. And, you know, I was always wondering why he wanted to play that way with the players that he had in the squad that could play football. He had players of great quality there, yet he just wanted to play Route One like I've never seen it in my life. So, you know, for me as a striker, I see play building up and then I make my runs off play building up. But things would happen where the ball just get played in behind and I was like, wow, this is back to non-league days, the kind of football that we're doing. But he obviously was effective at it at the time. We had big, strong players at the start of the season. We started off the season really well, like a house on fire, won pretty much all 10 of the first games. So we were very effective, but some of the key components of the team moved on and Adrian went even more direct. We ended up playing through Danny Shittu, who was the defender. Every time the ball went out of play from anywhere past the halfway line, we'd do a long throw-in. So we brought in Lee Bromby, who had long throw-in from Sheffield United, I think. And he would just throw the ball into the box and we'd have to try and score a goal off a knockdown. And the same happened from any free kicks inside their half. We'd do the same. So I felt very, very frustrated playing there because we'd all look to Danny Shittu to be the goal scorer. No one ever said, come on, Nathan, come on, you know, other strikers, let's get a goal. It was, come on, Dan, go and score us a goal, because we knew he had to get up the field every time and try and score a goal from a corner, from a long throw in, from anything. Or it was just knockdowns. And it was very, very difficult because it's not the football I was used to. And everything suffered because of it. You know, players, that's the one place I've ever been where the fans didn't like me as a whole. I would say it might be 50-50 on players who knew, okay, he's not getting the service he would used to. But then there's players, obviously, they don't see that. They just supporters who don't see that. They just say, he didn't do well. He's not good. He's this. He's not this. So that was a bit of a very frustrating time playing at Watford until Malky Mackay took over, which was a great time. He took over there. I can talk about that a bit later, Connor.
Well, we'll talk about it now, can't we? I mean, just tell us about the experience of playing under Malky Mackay in that team. Obviously, you had that relative success.
Yeah, so I went away on loan to Greece, played in Greece in the Super League for one season. Went to, I think it was Derby for one season, and then went back to Watford. And at that point, Malky Mackay took over. And he just, you know, he was a great man manager. And the way he wanted to play was just pure football. He says, look, I know we're not Barcelona, but the triangles that they do, he made us watch some tapes of triangles that you know, Barcelona passing and stuff. And he's like, this is what we want. We want this kind of football. We're playing the ball on the deck and we've got players that can do it. And he just gave us the license to play. And pre-season was amazing because we did everything with a ball. He gave us our own options of how we wanted to be treated, how we wanted to, you know, what food we wanted before and after games, how we wanted to review matches, how we wanted to do everything. So it was all like a consensus between everyone, how we wanted things dealt with within the parameters that he allowed. And I just felt that was just an amazing way to do things. And the problem was at Watford at that time was the way that they bought me from Wigan at the time, it was like 3.25 with, you know, the extra 1 point, the extra 1 million coming up on appearances. So for one thing I found out, I think obviously Watford at the time, they were struggling financially, couldn't handle a lot financially. But every time I would start, it would cost them an extra 7,000 going back to Wigan. So I knew that I was fighting a massive battle. I was never going to start a game. I think I started one game that season because a lot of players were injured. But Malky Mackay, he was playing me about 30 minutes every game. And I would come on and change the game whenever needed. and it would make a massive difference. I'd come on and we'd have the, you know, we'd get all of the momentum back, and I would always help the team. So it felt good because I knew I was getting, you know, good minutes. 30 minutes is not bad. Obviously, it's not great because I wanted to be playing. But if I felt like match fitness for 90 minutes was going to be very difficult to come by.
And because, I mean, in that the situation there, you mentioned that, you know, starting in terms of that contract, having, you know, playing those minutes, you were limited to those minutes, but 30 minutes for a substitute every game, sort of been, it showed confidence in you in a way, didn't it, that you would always come on, I suppose?
Definitely. He knew that I could change the game, and I knew that, obviously, I got ability to help the team. I would have liked to have scored a few more, but I remember scoring away at Ipswich at the time as well, so helping us there. But we did definitely, he did show a lot of confidence in, you know, always bringing me on. He knew what I could do. He had belief in what I could do, and he'd, you know, always turned to bringing me on. So, you know, I'd like to, obviously, I thank him for having that faith in me as well, especially at a time where, you know, I'd gone through that very hard spell under Andy Bruford at the time. And then coming back then, and obviously we knew that the club wanted me to move on because of that clause that was going on. And he said, look, he's going to use me throughout the season. And he did. So I was happy for that. I was really happy for that. It just showed that I could still do what I knew I could always do. And that's playing well. Just didn't score as much as I wanted to.
But you forget at this stage of your career, when you had the difficult period at Watford, in terms of your age, you should have been in the prime of your career, yeah. I suppose. Is that the most frustrating thing, looking back, that, you know, when you were, you know, 27, 28, 29, 30, that you didn't get that consistent run of games, that confidence from a manager to back you?
That's exactly what I realised from playing pre-seasons. You know, when I was playing regularly at Wigan the whole time, year after year, I remember exactly what I needed to be that kind of guy that can last 90 minutes at the pace that I, you know, I work at. And I knew I needed a pre-season, full pre-season, playing all the games. And then that first game that really matters, it's a different intensity. And I remember always getting cramp first game, you know, 70 minutes or so, I'd get cramp. But then from then onwards, I'd be ready to continue playing 90 minutes throughout the rest of the season. But playing the bit part at West Brom, not playing starting every game, so that brought it down a bit. But then when I went to Watford at the time, there was no reserve games. There was no games apart from first team games. So you're never really playing unless you're playing in the first team. And that hurt as well, because when I did come in, you know, the fitness levels wasn't up to the level of match fitness. You can never replicate a match, even with running on, you know, in the week and whatever you do, you can't replicate a match unless you're in a match, because you push yourself to crazy limits and without realizing, you know, if you're running on a treadmill, you'll get tired and you'll have to stop. But if you're running against someone and you, even though you get tired, you have to continue going. It's a weird one, but you know, people, you understand how the intensity is much harder in a football match. But like I said, that's what I think hurt me a lot, because I knew that's what I needed wherever I was going to go, for a manager to back me and give me that. I did get it back with Paul Jewell, back at Derby again. Went to Derby. I think that was in between that time at Watford. Went to Derby on loan, and he brought me in there. I had a full pre-season, scored lots of goals in pre-season. Started the season on fire, got a bit of a hamstring injury. So I was in and out of the team a little bit through the hamstring injury. But before he actually resigned or got sacked, whichever it was, I had 9 goals and we was in the quarterfinals. We had Man United in the cup. I was the top scorer at the club, top scorer in the cup at the time. I had a hamstring pull, so I'd never really got over that hamstring pull. But when the new manager came in, he totally just disregarded me completely. So Nigel Clough didn't bother with me at all. Didn't play against Man United. We drew Man United again in the next cup at Old Trafford. Didn't get to play in any of the games. Was just in and around the squad, maybe on the bench a few times. Finished the season with 9 goals. But it was a frustrating time because his assistant would always say, "You've done absolutely amazing. It's not what you're doing on the training field while you're not in the side." He really wanted to tell me that. But, you know, my agent talking to other clubs, what they were thinking was, he's not scored a goal. He's not played in so long. Yeah, I was on fire in training every day. But you can't show that, can you? So it was a really frustrating time that I didn't get that run of games after poor Joel left at Derby.
I think we sort of skirted round the point a little bit in terms of that move to Greece. Just tell us how that all came about, because it sounds a very random sort of time in your career, of course, but it's such an odd sort of move to make at that stage in your career.
Well, what it was, I was at Watford at the time with pre-season. I was at Watford at the time, and Malcolm Mackay, you know, he said, you know, I knew the situation at Watford that they needed to let me go or get me off the books so I don't, you know, cost the club more money playing. So obviously I knew I wasn't going to start enough. And they came in, the team in Greece came in for me for loan. So he said, "Listen, just go over there. You know, I'm not telling you to go over there. Just go over there, have a look, see how it is. If you're not happy, just come back." And that was that's how he left it with me. I said, "Okay, I'll go out there and hear them out." So when I went over there, you know, I decided, look, I'm just going to have a year away from England. I'm going to take up a new challenge. I know that, you know, the situation at Watford. I'm going to move over there. I'm going to play in the Super League. And at the time, I think Cisse was at Panathinaikos. We had a few other top players in the league. So, you know, Olympiacos, he had Lua playing there as well. So I was like, okay, it'd be good for me to go over there and, you know, do a little bit there and then see what happens. And then that's why I decided I'm going to, you know, have another challenge and go over there. Did pretty well, to be fair. I got injured twice over there, actually, with meniscus in one leg and then meniscus in the other leg at the start of the season after. So it was a bit of a, you know, a frustrating period in terms of that as well. But the manager there, the owner of Skoda Xanthi, the club, he brought me over to Greece, over to Athens. He said, "Listen, I want you to stay another year." But my wife didn't want me to stay there. She wanted to get back to England. Obviously, it's a good time to come back as well and try and continue my career here in England.
But of course, the time in Greece, it will have been a different sort of training schedule, I'm guessing. You probably would have, I don't know, you know, enjoyed it more with the sunshine, with the relative, you know, heat that you had compared to, you know, some of the tough days when it used to be, you know, -5 out on the training ground in England.
Yeah, over in Greece it was great. The weather was amazing, obviously during the summer, and even when it was cold, it was like nine degrees when it was cold, so it wasn't bad. And also training was at a different time, so you train at, you know, you get to train at 5-6 o'clock in the afternoon, so you have the morning to yourself, you have the evening to yourself, you have training in the middle of the day. So it'd be pretty good. It's a nice time to train, actually. You know, training every day at that time, it means you just get to do what you need to do in the day. And then you can get to work and do your sessions in the afternoon. So, yeah, it was a change of experience. It was lovely. It was a lovely time out there. The fit, everyone was, you know, the same. It was just things done a little bit differently. And it was great to get to experience that and go and live in a different country and see how it's done, you know, and how they run their matches in their way. So, yeah, it was great.
A different sort of lifestyle, I suppose. But I want to talk to you as well about your faith as well and you know, converting to Islam. How important was that for you personally, and how did you, you know, fit it around your footballing career?
Yeah, it was something that, you know, at the age of, what, 22, I think it was. I was at Wigan at the time, and I felt at the time. So basically, I was speaking to who is my wife now, and she obviously brought up the situation of Islam and stuff. And I told her, oh, my brother's Muslim as well. And certain things that he tells me are pretty interesting. But I never felt really too interested in religion at the time. But once I realized that, and, you know, if things were going to get serious between us, obviously I would have had to be a Muslim or nothing. Or we obviously not be serious and we go our separate ways. So for me, in my head, I was like, I'm not going to become a person of a different religion or a different faith just because of somebody else. I need to learn and find out what this is all about. So I decided to learn about my own religion that I've been brought up on. That's Christianity and Islam as well. So at that time I was at Wigan, and I found, you know, lots of evidence that I believe to be evidence, and to be that Islam was the way of life that you should be living. And so with that in my mind, for the evidence that I had, I decided, okay, I'm going to call myself a Muslim at the time. But, you know, it affected the football. It did affect the football. At the time, I was really excited because I found something new, and I wondered why nobody had told me about this for so many years. But it came at a time when 9/11, I think, happened, and a few negative things happened in the press. So I didn't realize, you know, all of this was, you know, connected with that kind of stuff that's going on, obviously in the media. And kind of people saw it in a bad light, you know, that I was a Muslim or whatever. And a lot of things, you know, I feel a lot of things happened that time, which became a challenge. It's maybe the chairman at the time at Wigan wondering why I got married on a Friday. So the way his mind, so he put that in a newspaper at one point, I remember. And he's saying I was, you know, different and all of this. And I was like, but that's in your mind of what a marriage is in English, in the English way. But in Islam, you have to be married to be with someone. So, but the marriage is a bit different. So you just need to say that you want to be married to someone and basically have witnesses there. And that's it. So we just had a quiet, quick marriage kind of thing. And we went for a meal. Me, Jason Roberts, and Jason Jarrett, and a few others. We just went for a meal. I think it was just like an Italian place in Bolton. Sat down, had some meal, and went home, and then prepared for the game. So for me, it's like a normal day. But for them, it was like, why is he having a massive wedding before the match and all this? And it's like, his head's not right and all of this. And I was like, oh, I wish they just understood. But they didn't. And when I went to West Brom at the time, I think it played its part there. I think when I went to Watford at the time, I think I remember my agent said, was asking if I would cut my beard. So it was little things. I was like, why do I need to cut my beard when, you know, there's other players out there with massive beards playing? They're not Muslim, but why am I looked at in a way because I've got a beard? And I just think it was the timing of me becoming Muslim at the time. And then what's happened in the media, being connected to all of that, I think it played a massive part in people thinking that my head wasn't in football. But my head was totally in football. And it's just one of them things. I think when you're on the team bus and people are playing cards for money, they're gambling, or if I'm trying to read something about my religion, that's seen in a bad light rather than people gambling and playing cards for money. So it was just one of them things. I saw the good in what I was doing, you know, just in my spare time and all of that. You know, I've seen, noticing that my career's kind of changing a little bit. I think, you know, when people talk and you get a name for something in football, that sticks no matter what it is, whether it's positive or negative. And I think that's what stuck with me at the time. And whenever my name was mentioned, it was always religion coming up as well. And I think it played quite a part in the way my career continued, because the amount of things that came out of it, there was, you know, people saying when you come to the training ground, leave your religion at the door. There are people saying loads of things, you know, when you come in training, I'm God, you look at me, obviously for as a joke at times, but it was something that I recognized was a major problem in the sport. And that's why I obviously started the Association of Muslim Footballers, just showcasing the amount of football players who are at the top of their game, still practicing and still able to be top players in the leagues. And that made a massive difference, because a lot of young players coming up felt that they couldn't ask for, you know, their meat that's killed a certain way, halal meat. They couldn't ask to pray on a Friday or something. But with these kind of things in place, they had to cater to these big players who were doing really well, which opened up the doors for the smaller players who were, you know, more unknown, to be able to practice their religion without feeling like it's going to affect their career. So yeah, it did play a major part. And I felt I needed to make a difference in that way. And I did manage to do that.
You touched on it there, but how big is it being the fact having, you know, these Muslim role models in the game, the likes of Mo Salah, the likes of, you know, Sami Nasri, for example, who are at the top of the game, and you know, openly practicing?
Yeah, it was massive. It was massive because clubs recognised it. The managers of the clubs, like the top people at clubs, recognised that there was a need to support them in their needs, you know, as a person. So it's big, because once you support, for example, a Mo Salah or a Demba Ba, who was at Chelsea, he was openly, obviously, when he scores, he does the prayer. And then everyone knew, obviously, he needs a little prayer room, a little area to pray in whenever he needs to pray, and all that kind of stuff. What he needs is halal meat. Everybody was able to do that, and it was becoming just the norm. Everyone was doing it, you know. They were providing the meat for them, and they're providing, allowing them to go and pray at the time. So that was perfect. It was perfect. It was just perfect that, you know, that we had people like that to be able to open up the doors for that, to be honest.
Finally, looking at your career as a whole, in terms of the interview and looking, you know, the football side of it, like I mentioned, as a whole, what would you say is your fondest memory of your time as a player?
I think my fondest memory, I've got a few, to be fair. My first game playing at Bristol Rovers, that's number one, is a massive memory. The FA Cup is another highlight, when I scored against Derby, the hat-trick there. Playing in the Premiership, playing against Man United at Old Trafford, was another thing that I remember. You know, it's just one of those moments that I'm always going to remember at the top of my head as soon as I think about it. And that's basically the major parts. And playing with Kanu, who I grew up playing with on a computer game. And then I'm playing at the, you know, the peak of my game, I'm playing with him at West Brom. It's just a great feeling again. So there were the highlights, I would say, of my career that I really, really enjoyed. And that's definitely it.
And the final note I want to end on is, you know, you've touched on it throughout, but what are you doing now, and what's next for Nathan Ellington?
I have a football academy where I look after kids, obviously do hold sessions for kids. And I also represent players as well, players, young and up and coming talent as well in football. So they're the two things that I'm currently doing. And I also do a bit of foreign exchange myself. So I've obviously tried to find the next industry which actually will provide the same kind of financial possibilities as I did as a football player. And that's something I know I've got to get to work hard at to be able to produce the same as what I did as a football player. So I'm just working hard towards those goals at the moment. And hopefully it's all successful.
I'm sure it will be a success. Nathan Ellington, thank you very much for talking to us, and good luck in your path after your footballing career.
Thanks a lot. Thank you.
Well, thanks very much for listening to what was a fascinating second part of that interview with Nathan Ellington. We talked a lot about the rise to the Premier League in that first part of this two-part special. But the second part of his career seemed to be a lot more of a struggle for Nathan Ellington, and he opened up obviously on some more personal topics there in the second half of the show. So yeah, once again, thank you very much for listening. Next week, we'll be back with the preview show, a new revamped version of that podcast. So looking forward to you joining us then. Thanks for listening.